And welcome into the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this very, very cold Tuesday morning. Snowy in some parts, Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, what's going on? Joe Rex Road, how we doing?
Doing great. Roll Tide.
Did you change out of your Ohio State underwear and put on your Alabama underwear?
Yeah, I don't have either, but I stopped doing the OHIO chants.
That's good.
Are you sure you don't have any OHIO underwear?
Oh, man. That's funny, too. I should actually go find some Twitter-like wars I've had with Ohio State fans over the years.
Which I'm sure there's many of them.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes.
Ohio State Twitter is a very sane place, too.
Joe, you've gotten in many Twitter wars with
sure
everybody.
Really what's that?
You've gotten in many Twitter wars with many people.
Yes.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. The Buckeye fans, they can, they can get after it. So, but you know, if you're the Browns / Buckeye fan, you know, you almost had like the two best days back to back ever. But you still got to be all right with getting to the Natty and beating the Steelers, right?
Yeah, like the Buckeyes have had plenty of success. So if you're a Browns and Buckeyes fan, just take the Browns right now. I mean, this has obviously not happened in the last generation, so just enjoy it. The Buckeyes will be back.
They will be. It really stunk last night that Trey Sermon went down in the first play, and I'm not saying it changes the outcome, but the guy was absolutely dominant against Clemson.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, who is this guy? Like, you know, and that first play, like, it was like they ran a quick play, and they didn't block anyone. And the whole Alabama defense just slammed into the ground. Looks like it broke his collarbone. It's just awful, man. That stinks.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really tough way to start the game with Trey Sermon going down. And Alabama just rolls from there, essentially. Ends up winning 52-24 to capture their sixth national championship under Nick Saban. Nick Saban wins his seventh national title total. And I think he was already this, in my opinion, before this game. But I think unquestionably now, the greatest college football coach of all time.
Yeah, I mean, unquestionably before, I think. But, yeah, you can keep adding on to it. And, you know, it's, again, this – it's a great example for the coaches out there who think that their system is the end-all, be-all, and, you know, that what they do is the right way. You know, Nick Saban complained about something and then just said, okay, well, I'll do it better than you. And, I think one of the most amazing things also is, you know, when you have that kind of success, obviously you keep losing your coordinators, and it's amazing that he can do that and just keep bringing in people. And I think Sarkisian was really good this year, but how do you keep cycling through all these coaches and still get these results? Well, I mean, it helps to have the best players. Let's be clear, but still that's a, you know, the overused sports term, quote unquote, culture, it's got to be real strong to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's apparent that that culture is strong in Alabama. And that game, I mean, that offense is just unbelievable to watch. And Devontae Smith, he's got 12 catches, 215 yards, and 3 touchdowns in the game in the first half. And then he gets hurt in the second half, is not able to add to that production. But seriously, if he stays healthy that whole game, he ends up somewhere like around 350 yards, right? I mean, it was unbelievable what he was doing.
Yeah, that guy, it's really going to be interesting with him in the NFL because I do buy into, man, you were going to take harder hits from bigger, faster guys, and he is skinny. But his acceleration and just all-around excellence as a receiver and anything you want him to do, he is something else. Anybody who I got in some Twitter wars last night with people who didn't vote for him, by the way, for the Heisman. So, which I mean, man, you should feel bad right now if you didn't vote for him. If you had a vote and you didn't vote for him for the Heisman, you should feel bad.
You shouldn't have a vote. If you didn't put Devontae Smith in your top three, you do not deserve to have a vote for the Heisman.
Yeah, I mean it was unbelievable what he was able to do last night, and it's like he continued to build game by game on the season, and it didn't matter what Ohio State did last night. They tried to keep him in front of him and not let him have the big play, and they throw a swing route. I mean the play design, I think it was on Smith's first touchdown by Steve Sarkisian, where they basically motioned him into the backfield like he was coming around on a reverse, and then he just stops and goes back to where he came from and is wide open and nobody has a chance to catch in there. I mean, just the play design, the execution level, and the versatility of Devontae Smith. I mean, that offense was unstoppable all season long, and Ohio State had absolutely no answers last night.
No, not a single answer. Again, that offensive line completely dominated every game this year. And I will say, speaking of the Heisman vote and regrets, I messed up, I think, by not having Najee Harris in my top three, because that guy, there's another guy. I mean, in the NFL, I mean, that guy is so hard to bring down and so good at everything. He's going to be special on Sundays too.
He is, and we wondered whether or not Jaylen Waddle would play last night, and he did. And I got to be honest, every time that guy walked on the field, my entire body started hurting. It was very brutal for me to watch. Apparently, he's okay, and apparently they were talking on the broadcast last night. Jaylen Waddle has a full range of motion, but he came up limping every time he ran. I appreciated his spirit, and I appreciated his heart, and he ends up with 3 catches for 34 yards in that game. But every time he came out on the field, I was like, dude, please go sit down, because you're about to lose a lot of money if you don't.
I agree. Like that first play, and I'm like, you know what? He's limping. All right, hey, you made a play. You know, your team's probably going to win this thing. Just have a seat. And he kept coming out there. And obviously more reps with Devontae Smith. But, yeah, that's the extreme other end of, you know, guys opting out of games like this. It's like, in any point in history, like that guy, yeah, you might want to opt out here, but hopefully he'll be fine. And he's another guy who, when healthy, I mean, both those guys are going to be ridiculous. There's so many NFL players in the field last night, including Mac Jones. Mac Jones is excellent. I mean, he's an elite thrower of the football. Doesn't face a lot of duress, but man, I mean, does he place the football?
Yeah, I mean, Mac Jones, 36 of 45 last night, 464 yards and 5 touchdowns on the night. All of those college football championship game records. So an incredible game by Mac Jones. And it got me wondering, like, I've seen a lot of Alabama teams that are really, really good, obviously, in the last decade plus since Nick Saban has been there. Was this the best one? Was this the best Alabama team that he's ever had? I mean, I think certainly the best offense that they've ever had, but when I start factoring in the whole team, I think you can make an argument this was the best Alabama team that Nick Saban has ever had, only the second one he's had that's gone undefeated to win the national championship game.
Yeah, I know it's the prisoner of the moment thing. Like you said, easily the best offense, but I think I would go there. I think I would go best overall, just dominant. And, you know, again, in this strange year, I mean, if anyone wants to put an asterisk on this, well, then it's because it's harder to get through all of these things and, you know, and win a championship and get to the end. You know, that's all SEC games that they played. I mean, that's, they never had, you know, the handful of games that, you know, not handful, but, you know, 3 games that usually you have in a season that kind of lets you ease into, you know, something. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of what would, I mean, you know, the last time they won it obviously was 2017, and that was a great team, but this was certainly better than that. You go back to, I think, the 09 team, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had certainly some collections of defensive talent and dominance on that side of the ball where you just couldn't move on them, but I'd still take this version.
So let me ask you both this. Very similar teams, I think very similar strengths and weaknesses. This year's Alabama team, last year's LSU team. Which one are you taking? Because I think it's pretty close. Ryan Porth, we'll start with you.
I would probably side with last year's LSU team because LSU had a better defense than what Alabama had. I mean, Alabama's offense is unreal with the big three with Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, and Najee Harris. But they were exposed defensively throughout the year and just didn't matter because their offense was just so good. LSU was unbelievable last year, just on both sides of the ball.
Joe Rexroad, are you going LSU from last year, Alabama from this year?
Yeah, I'm gonna go the other way. And as great as that LSU, the hard part is, you know, LSU has the edge at quarterback, and I agree they have a better defense. But I mean, even last year with that incredible LSU team and a flawed Alabama team, I mean, that game went down to the wire in Tuscaloosa, and you know, Alabama kind of botched it. But what was the final score? 46-41 last year. I mean, this year's Alabama team puts a punking on last year's Alabama team. So I'll use transitive football to say, I mean, that last year's LSU defense definitely was better than this Alabama defense, but it wasn't good enough to stop this Alabama offense at all.
Yeah,
I mean, that would be a great game.
I think it would be a great game. And we had a lot of people talking last year after LSU won the championship that maybe that's the greatest college football team of all time. And, again, I know we're the Tuesday after the national championship here, but where do you think this Alabama team belongs? I mean, it's obviously – it's different era, so it's really tough to do this. But that was a pretty popular sentiment last year after LSU won that, hey, this is the greatest football team that's ever played in college football. When you factor in all the draft picks and the talent that they had offensively especially and just the historic numbers they were able to put up, does this Alabama team belong in the conversation as, you know, one of the top five greatest college football teams of all time?
Oh, yeah. I would say definitely in the conversation. You know, like you said, LSU last year, 2001 Miami is a popular pick. You go like 71 Nebraska with Johnny Rogers. I think the mid-90s Nebraska teams, and I got to see one of those live, just utterly – just dominant.
Yeah.
You know, you think about USC, Reggie Bush team. I mean, there's a lot of them that you can throw out there. People will throw this one out there too, just like they'll throw last year's LSU team out there. I mean, and I think they both deserve it. I mean, at some point, like, every champion can't be in the discussion like that. But I really do think that team last year and this one this year will be there. And this will probably be the Alabama team that gets tossed into that discussion more than any other.
Joe Rexroder, was there ever a point in the game last night where you looked at what Alabama was doing on the field and thought to yourself, yeah, that gap between Tennessee and Alabama sure is closing in this matchup?
Well, hey, you know, Pruitt never said like it wasn't like 18 miles long, you know. I mean, it can be 17.9 miles long now, and that's technically closing.
Yeah.
I can assure you that the gap is closing.
Thank you, Coach. It sure looked like it last night, man. I tell you what.
Well, I mean, look, it's also like kind of depressing for all of college football, right?
Yeah. I
mean, all of it is. Because, you know, like Clemson, I mean, they had their best player ever, maybe, and they would have been absolutely destroyed by Alabama last night. You know?
Yeah.
And I know it's a one-time team, and it won't be the exact same team again, but gosh, it's just college football feels more predetermined than ever.
Do we need to give more respect to Notre Dame based on what happened in that game last night to Ohio State?
No.
Okay.
I tweeted it last night. I'm just saying, like, they hung in better than Ohio State did, you know?
Ryan Porth is not going to give any respect whatsoever to Brian Kelly. It's just not going to happen.
Alabama looked bored against Notre Dame. I mean, they look completely bored. They knew they were going to run away with that game, but they didn't cover the game, which I'm still salty about.
Yeah, me too.
But they knew they were going to win, and they were just bored. So, you know.
Not giving Notre Dame any credit over here. My goodness.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Alabama, I mean, Notre Dame, Ohio State, probably a good game. We saw, you know, Notre Dame Clemson. That was not a good game. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind too. But it's this year, there's just a big gap between Alabama and everyone. But I did have that thought last night. Like, well, you know, I mean, if you're going to ask Notre Dame, you're going to ask Brian Kelly, like, gosh, you know, all these questions about when are you ever going to figure out how to hang? And I guess you got to ask Ryan Day the same stuff last night, right? I didn't stay up for the pressers.
Yeah, no, I made it to the end of the game, and then my sweet head hit the pillow after that. So congratulations to Alabama and Nick Saban. And if you're thinking that maybe that this is the end of their run, they just signed literally the greatest recruiting class of all time in 2021. So looking forward to that for the next few years in Alabama as well. We got a loaded show for you today. We'll be joined by Predators president and CEO Sean Henry at 8 o'clock. Charles Robinson, our man from Yahoo Sports, will join us at 9. We'll get into all things NFL playoffs with him. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst and former Preds goaltender, will join us at 9:30. And a lot of Titans to get to today as well. So keep it locked right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And when we come back, we saw a former Tennessee coach last night roaming the sidelines, being borderline useless in the game for Alabama against Ohio State. Could there be another Tennessee coach on the Alabama sideline very, very soon? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And guys, I've got to say, it was pretty incredible last night watching the national championship game to sit there and look at just how many times Butch Jones found his way onto the camera. Like, it was really talented by him to be out there really not doing anything and find his way onto the camera as much as he did. I have to say, that is probably the most impressive quality that Butch Jones possesses, is his ability to just insert himself right into the action.
He's very good at it. He knows where they are. He knows where they are. And, you know, thankfully he got his camera time and Alabama got their analysis or whatever. Yes. One more night from Butch.
Had to make sure he was back in there. I just kept thinking about, like, what corny way is Butch Jones going to use this national championship by Alabama at Arkansas State as if he was like some major factor in them winning? Like, how is he going to use this in recruiting? What sort of corny video is Butch Jones going to come up with? That was my thought process last night watching this game when it became clearer and clearer by the second that Alabama was just going to run away with it against Ohio State.
Oh, yes. The rings will be on display. Oh, yeah. Probably just like wear the ring. We probably just wear them all the time, you know?
Be out there. Why just not? Making another brick mailbox. The rings be flashing. Be great.
His first slogan in Jonesboro is going to be "Kiss the Rings."
Yeah.
Ooh, nice.
By the way, why wasn't he in his own borough already? Like, he's completely irrelevant to Alabama football.
He's got
to
stick it out, man.
Like, why? We see defensive coordinators leave and go to their, you know, new home all the time. There's Butch just, you know, hogging all the camera time on the
sideline. I saw a tweet last night that was perfect, and it was like, I don't even remember who it was from, but it was like, you have to really admire Butch Jones and his dedication. He's already been hired away from his full-time job, but wanted to make sure he stuck it out with his internship anyway. You don't see that a whole lot. It's dedication.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's I mean, I suppose if you're Arkansas State, you know, you probably are like, yeah, man, get some camera time, right? I mean, you may as well. I mean, I know that when Jeremy Pruitt, was hired by Tennessee, there was, oh, look at this guy. Look at this guy, championship pedigree coming in Knoxville.
But he was an actual coach. Like, he was actually doing something out there. You know, he was the defensive coordinator at the time. Butch Jones is just standing there going to get Saban's dry cleaning. But, hey, good for him. He wrapped it up. A national championship dry cleaning performance last night for Butch Jones. And it got you thinking, Joe, as you look ahead to what's going on right now in Tennessee, Jeremy Pruitt, the Tennessee football program under investigation for potential recruiting violations. And it looks like a dark cloud is closing in around that football program and Jeremy Pruitt, to the point where a lot of people feel like he's not going to be there next year and is not going to be the head coach of that team. Do you think that we could see a reunion of Jeremy Pruitt on the Alabama sideline very soon, given what his future looks like at Tennessee right now?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, if this goes that way, like, how hireable is Jeremy Pruitt all of a sudden? He goes from, you know, SEC head coach making $4 million plus to, first of all, to not sure on the buyout, but we do know if they just fired him now, it'd be almost $13 million. But he goes from that to who knows how much smaller the buyout might be. I mean, I really have my doubts they can fire him for cause. I mean, and I'm saying that while this investigation goes on and there's a lot we don't know about it. But, yeah, that might be his one thing is to be that, you know, interns. I mean, really, you know, they call them analysts, and there are a lot of it's sort of like a coaching rehabilitation program, really. A lot of coaches who get fired at various things, or, you know, their staffs get fired, they end up in these big programs, working for very little, but at least kind of staying attached to the game. So yeah, that might be the most likely situation for Pruitt, unless he wants to go back to high school football, if this goes bad on him.
Yeah, and it's looking more and more like it could go bad on Jamie Pruitt. I'm gonna have Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville join me later today on the Power T podcast, so we'll get into the latest in the Tennessee investigation with him. But another move that is, I guess, looking more and more likely, like it's about to get done out there, is Bill O'Brien maybe becoming the offensive coordinator at Alabama. So for those Titans fans who thought, okay, maybe Arthur Smith is out the door, not going to be the offensive coordinator with the Titans next year, he moves on and becomes a head coach, maybe you bring in Bill O'Brien. It looks like Bill O'Brien could be sliding in there at Alabama alongside Nick Saban to be their offensive coordinator. Joe, if that happens and Bill O'Brien ends up in Alabama, what do you think of that move by Alabama? What do you think that fit could look like with Nick Saban and Bill O'Brien?
Yeah, I can't say that would have been on my list. You know, you just never know. But hey, if you're Bill O'Brien, it's just like a lot of these coaches, like, I think I'd like to go somewhere where I just have the best players by far. You know, I think I'd like to do that. In the NFL, it's all this parody, and you know it's a slim margin for error. How about I just go and just bludgeon Missouri, you know, every week? I mean, so it's an interesting move, and you know, these coaches are such different backgrounds too. If you go through his whole list of guys and the different systems that they have come from, I mean, I think back to when Saban hired Jim McElwain. I couldn't believe it, because Jim McElwain to me was, you know, a spread offense guy his whole career, including, you know, he was a John L. Smith guy at Michigan State, at, you know, after Saban. And I was like, why would he hire McElwain? Well, you know, they did kind of what Saban wanted to do, and he kind of did what McElwain wanted to do, and it worked out. They all work out. That's which, again, Jimmy's and Joe's X over X's and O's, but I'm sure Bill O'Brien will be good. I'm sure he'll be a good – hey, just don't let Bill O'Brien get involved in the personnel decisions. You're going
to
be all right.
I was about to say, I mean, the best part about having the best players in college football is that you can't trade them away.
That's right. That's right. Bill, no, we do not want to give our quarterback to Auburn, Bill. No.
Do not.
All the plays, buddy.
Don't send Devontae Smith to Tennessee. We don't want to do that, Bill. I think he's got an opportunity to come in and be great. I mean, I think it's easy to say that going into Alabama and the collection of talent that you're going to have. But, again, I do think there's this stigma out there of Bill O'Brien and his time in Houston that he's not a very good coach. I don't think that's true. I think he is. I think he's a really good coach. I thought he did a great job at Penn State, especially given the situation that he was walking into. Yep. And then, you know, as far as just purely a head coach was concerned, I think he did a fine job in Houston as well. It's when he got his hands all over the roster and started making decisions that, quite frankly, he's not qualified to make, that's when you ran into some problems. But I think, you know, him coming in, as long as he's willing to adapt and kind of play more of a college football style of system, which I think he will be. I mean, Nick Saban knows the blueprint that's worked for them the past few years, regardless of the offensive coordinator. I think he's going to do a great job, and Alabama's just going to keep on rolling like they have been since 2007.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bill O'Brien, had it worked out, I think Bill O'Brien as the OC here would have been, I don't think that would have, I know some people would have complained about it, you know, but I don't think that would have been bad at all. No, he's been a good coach. There's no doubt about it. There's some stuff about, you know, not getting along with players here and there, but I mean, it's like, how do you totally avoid that, you know, as a coach over a period of time? I think he would have been good here. I think he'll be good there. And then, you know, then it's for him, it'll be interesting, because you know what happens. You get that job. And again, it's amazing to me that Texas, great job, Sarkisian, yeah, but like, I still don't get that hire. But someone will want to hire Bill O'Brien. And then it's a question of which way does he want to go? Does he want to come back to this league and have more life balance, but also have to deal with parity? Or does he want to try to, you know, go someplace? And I don't know if he can get like a top job. But who knows? I mean, if Alabama's winning natties and that offense looks good, he'll be attractive to people.
Joe, did you catch any of your boy Hugh Freeze last night on the ESPN Megacast?
Ah, you know what? Honestly, I totally forgot about that. Was he wearing Tennessee stuff?
I don't think so. I turned it over there for a minute, and he was talking and flubbing all over his words, so I immediately turned it off. But I am very interested to see, like, if there's somehow for them to break down the Megacast ratings of Hugh Freeze being a part of it. If Knoxville's not number one on that list, I'm going to be highly disappointed.
Just so people could hear his voice.
Yeah. Vol Twitter. I mean, it was an interesting night last night for Vol Twitter, because half the people that I saw were complaining that Tennessee didn't go out and hire Steve Sarkisian before Texas did, and the other half were watching Hugh Freeze on the Megacast just drooling over every word that he said. I mean, it was a great, great kind of dichotomy there of what was going on Vol Twitter.
And what percentage of Tennessee fans were rooting for Alabama to win?
Oh, I think a significant amount. I really do.
More than 50?
I don't know if I'd go more than 50, but, you know, 25, 30%, I think so. There is this weird SEC thing where it's the conference above everything else, and I've never been able to figure that out for the life of me. I just don't root for Alabama. It's not a thing that I do, but that is a big-time thing in the SEC is this is our conference. We're rooting for our conference over everything else, and I don't quite understand it.
Well, especially when you play the Big Ten, because that's the other – I mean, that's the right. only other league that can, you know, that can start to compete with you. And it's not as good, but you know, that's the top two. But still, like – and it's not like Alabama losing last night, all of a sudden they're going to fall apart. But if I were a Tennessee fan, I think I'd want them to not have success at any chance that they can have not success.
You would think. That, I mean, that would probably be the way I would approach that as well. But – like you said, they just keep on rolling. Sixth national championship under Nick Saban, his seventh overall, and it doesn't look like they're going to slow down anytime soon. When we come back, we're going to dive into the Titans. We'll get into a little free agency talk and visit our poll question of the day regarding Jonnu Smith, Corey Davis, and Jayon Brown. Which of those do you want back the most? We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans and some big offseason decisions coming up for John Robinson and company. And we've talked about it a lot this year, Joe. A lot of the decisions are going to be revolved around three guys, and that is Jonnu Smith, Corey Davis, and Jayon Brown. And that is our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Of these three Titans players, which one would you most like to see return next season for the Titans? You've got Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, Jayon Brown. Right now, it's very early in the voting, 127 votes in, 38% going with Corey Davis, 37% going with Jonnu Smith, and 25% going with Jayon Brown. So the early returns, Joe Rexrode, very close between Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, it's a great debate. You know, and I've gone back a little bit, you know, back and forth on it too. I'm gonna just squeeze over on the Jonnu side, but it's very close for me because I still believe that. First of all, you know, yes, you can draft a receiver, you can go sign a receiver, but your receiver depth is a problem. And so, if you lose your number two, it's not just that you have to replace him, you know. I mean, you need to replenish that even if you keep him. But then again, you can look at tight end and say, you know, you really probably need to draft someone there too, another young tight end to get someone developing. And what if you lose Jonnu Smith? What does that group look like? Not to mention just the talent you lose in him. I think if there's any way they can keep both of them, I think they're like, to me, they're one, two, and then there's a gap to Jayon Brown.
I would agree with that, and so far the voting reflects that. And it's just, to me, it comes down to the offense and just how productive it's been. You don't want to lose that. I mean, that's got to be something, even if Arthur Smith's gone and he's not here next year, and we'll see what happens with that maybe this week, you want to keep as many pieces of that offense together as you can. And Ryan Tannehill was asked about that yesterday in some of the Titans' end-of-season press conferences about the idea of bringing back Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. Here's what Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill had to say.
Love both those guys. Just great, great people, great teammate guys that I love playing the game with, that play the game, you know, how we like to play. So definitely love to have them back. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts there, and things have to line up in order for that to happen. But those guys had great years for us this year. They did a really good job in doing exactly what we asked of them to do. You know, they stepped up to the plate being in the last year of the contracts. Both those guys stepped up to the plate and played huge for us. So, you know, they deserve everything that they're going to get. But, yeah, I'd love to play with those guys again.
So, obviously, Ryan Tannehill would love to have both of those players back, and he knows how important and productive they can be in this offense. Joe, we've talked a ton this year about Jonnu Smith and kind of his reduced role in the passing game after Taylor Lewan went down. How much do you think that could help the Titans in terms of negotiations, just purely from the standpoint of the production wasn't there as much as we thought it could be with him based on his talent? I think if you watch him play and you watch the skill set that he has, it's pretty obvious that he is really, really good, really, really talented in this league. But just based on the way things played out this year for this Titans offense, did not get the chance to put that on full display as much as I thought he would heading into the season.
Well, I think if you're having good faith negotiations with his agent, then that shouldn't be a factor because everybody knows what happened, you know. So I think if you're talking about really keeping a guy, then that you got to have honest conversations about things like that. Now, could that situation, which then impacted his production, could that affect his market value at large? Yeah, it could. It's one of those things where the teams that do the homework should still know what they would have in him, but maybe. Maybe it makes him a little bit less attractive to some teams. But the reality of what he is doesn't change because of that. So I mean, if you're really talking about, like, if I'm him and the Titans are trying to nickel and dime me based on that, I got plenty of places I can go.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. And it's interesting to think back over the weekend and wonder how many players we just saw play their last game for the Titans. And obviously the three players we're talking about in this discussion, I would assume at least one of those guys is not going to be back next year. And it's probably going to be Jayon Brown. It would be the leader in the clubhouse if I had to pick right now. Maybe two of those guys won't be back next year. But as you look at other guys like Adam Humphries or maybe even Malcolm Butler, I mean, who's been floated out there too with how much money he's making, what are some other guys that you think may have played their last game in a Titans uniform either over this past weekend or as you look back at this season? Because I think Adam Humphries is one to me where I just don't see any way he's back for this team next year.
Yeah, Humphries for sure. Look, I mean, I tend to believe that they're going to keep Malcolm Butler. I think he had a good year, and I think that he's competitive. They need as much quality in that back end as they can get. And, you know, the guy is – I mean, he's on a 5-year, $61 million deal, making more than 12 a year. And, you know, he's got 2 years left on it. So that's a lot of money you could save. But how do you feel good? I mean, we just saw a Dory Jackson struggle. Like, how do you feel good about things if you move on from him? So I'm saying he's in. I don't think he's one of those guys. Now, there's other free agents, too. Daquan Jones, yep. I think, absolutely may have played his last game with the Titans. You know, he just completed a 3-year, $21 million deal. He's a good player. But I don't think you're paying that much or close to that much to keep him. And I think, you know, usually there's a suitor out there for someone like him. He's still only 29. I just think that that's one of those spots where you're just going to – you have to go younger and cheaper. I will. How about Clowney? Do we think Clowney's back?
You think so?
That was a joke.
Heidi from Dixon would want Clowney back.
Yes. Look, have we heard from Heidi lately? Is Heidi
– Yeah, we've heard from Heidi.
Well,
yeah.
We haven't been talking about Clowney as much, so we haven't heard from her as much.
Yeah, we've heard from her a little bit. But in all seriousness – I have heard some people say and throw out the idea of, okay, you get Clowney a full training camp. Hopefully he's healthy. Maybe he comes back next year and is more productive. Maybe the Titans re-sign him. And I just, I just don't think there's any way that he's back here next
year.
Well,
hey, if he'll take $3 million, great. You know, I mean, if he can get healthy and he will take a massive cut, great. That's not going to happen. I'm going to be fascinated to see the market for him. I mean, you know, and hey, let's in ripping John Robinson for making that move, let's remember, I mean, the New Orleans Saints sent their whole organization to like cook him up a seafood dinner and wine and dine. I mean, you know, the Ravens were trying to figure out a way to get him. The Browns offered him, as Charles Robinson told us, a huge amount of money, much more than the Titans paid him. It's like at some point you figure it ends, but I don't know. That's going to be fascinating. You know, other guys who could maybe not be here. I mean, you have to talk, I think. Look, Corey Curtis brought up Kenny Vaccaro, and I hadn't thought about that. But it's you look at spots where is there a backup in place on a rookie deal who you don't lose a ton. So if you feel good about Amani Hooker, then you could think about that. I still think Kenny Vaccaro is a good player. He's making $6 million a year. He didn't look good on a few plays the other day for sure. I thought this year though, overall, I thought he was still a plus player for them, but you throw that out there. That's a possibility. No, we weren't talking about who was talking about Jarrell Casey at this time last year. Not a single person, not a soul was talking about the idea that they were going to move Jarrell Casey. So you have to keep an open mind, expand it to some things like that. You know, what about Steven Gostkowski?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
He is a free agent. You know, 1 year, $2.75 million deal. Do you re-up with him? He had a good, strong finish. I suspect you do. I mean, at this point, you know, what's your alternative? You want to keep getting into the kicker cycle, you know, and I think at some point you have to try to find a good young kicker, but
Titans legend Sam Sloman
be back. That's right. You do have the doink man, the good doink. Michael Pruitt is a guy who is a free agent we don't talk about, but he could have played the last game. But I tell you what, here's a guy who I think that really deserves to not only be back, but to get paid more. Anthony Firkser. You know, that dude made $750K this year. I mean, that guy is an important part of your offense.
I mean, he was basically their third receiver at the end of the year.
Yeah. And like we said, I mean, we don't expect Humphreys back. That guy deserves a pay bump, man. Pay that guy. You know, there's where your cap's going up. Firkser are getting a big deal. But seriously, how do you not want him back? And I think you've got to have him back. And you got he should be making seven figures here in this league at this point. There's a lot of guys like that. You know, a lot of guys like Swaim is also. All those tight ends are up, which is kind of interesting. And, you know, you could probably find someone to replace Swaim. I think Michael Pruitt is a good player. And he was banged up this year. But for what they like to do, I think they need to try to keep really the whole tight end room together. And it's interesting that basically the whole room here is up for grabs.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Plain Joe texts in and says, Jonnu Smith's athleticism and playmaking ability is no secret in the NFL. When he struggled early in his career, it was blocking and withholding penalties. He's displayed the last 2 years dramatic improvement in those areas. That's got to be worth some money on his next contract.
Yeah. Look, Jonnu Smith, I thought early, I wondered, like, is this guy going to be an all-around tight end, you know, that can really be a factor in the run game? And he came in and he had a long way to go. On that side of the ball. And that's the part that we don't talk about as much because obviously it's not, you know, that's not the fun part, but you know, you talk to people in the building, he's gotten way better and he's an all around player. Another guy we haven't talked about yet who is up and may have played his last game for the Titans is Desmond King.
Yeah.
Do we think that the Titans are going to get into any kind of a bid to keep him?
I don't know. I mean, like, Christian Fulton's got to be a part of the plans at some point, right? Like, if you've got Malcolm Butler coming back next year, Adoree back next year, you just drafted Christian Fulton, I would guess you'd want to keep him in the slot and just see what you've got there. That, to me, is probably the way the Titans will go. So I would say if I had to guess right now, Desmond King probably not back next year.
Yeah, I mean, if you absolutely love Desmond King, then that might be where you think about Butler. If you think, you know what, Desmond King is perfect in the slot, this guy is, we got to try to keep him. I mean, Dory's playing on his fifth year option next year. I don't look at that as a viable. I mean, he's on his fifth year option next year, about $10 million. But maybe you say, you know what, Christian, you're at that other outside spot, and Malcolm is gone. That's possible. I don't think it'll happen, but I'm saying I think you have to look at all the different combinations. But I agree with you, Robbie. You can't spend a second-round pick on a guy and be in the cap situation you're in and not have a plan that has him starting, that doesn't have him starting next year.
Especially when you may not have your first-round pick from this year next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to get something out of this draft class, and we've talked about that a lot this year. And another thing we've talked about a lot this year, Mike Vrabel's decision not to hire a defensive coordinator. He was asked about that yesterday in his end-of-season press conference and had an interesting response. We'll have that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game is giving away three pair of tickets tomorrow to the Preds season opener versus the Columbus Blue Jackets at Bridgestone Arena. Every hour tomorrow, starting at 6 a.m. through 6 p.m., listen for the cue to call, and when you hear it, call 615-737-1025. The first caller will qualify to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds season and see the Preds season and home opener. Winners will be announced during Smashville Live tomorrow, which begins at 6 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, we've talked a lot this year about the decision by Vrabel and his staff not to hire a defensive coordinator. Shane Bowen was acting as the defensive coordinator. He was calling the plays, but no official title given to Shane Bowen. And Mike Vrabel was asked about that yesterday at his end-of-season press conference and the decision that went into that. And he had an interesting response. Here's what Titans head coach Mike Vrabel had to say.
Yeah, Mike, back on the defensive coordinator thing, you said during the season you didn't think that that was having an impact on defensive struggles. You still feel that way after the season's over? Do you think there's any benefit to having someone who's, I guess, quote-unquote, the head coach of that defense?
Yeah, you know, I think that this thing kind of took a life of its own, Joe, and I guess that it was really important. But, you know Shane led the meetings. Shane led the walkthroughs. Shane called the defense. And again, I think we get caught up too much in titles. And I guess I apologize because, you know, clearly didn't think it would take on a life of its own. And, you know, we'll coach better. We'll play better. But those are things that we have to do in all three phases. You know, there were times that it looked like we put all three phases together, played really well. And then there were stints where, you know, we didn't do that. You know, we're going to evaluate the roster and the coaching staff and, you know, the plays that we run and the scheme that we have and everything across the board, you know, because we ultimately didn't win a championship.
So that was Mike Vrabel yesterday on another wonderful, terrific question by our own Joe Rexrode. Joe, what did you think of Vrabel's response there and how, you know, you're talking about taking on a life of its own and how Shane was the one leading the meetings and Shane Bowen was the one calling the plays, was basically the defensive coordinator, just did not have the title of defensive coordinator. What did you think of Vrabel's response there?
Well, what I should have said next was, well, then why didn't you just keep Arthur Smith at tight ends coach and let him call some plays? I mean, if the title doesn't matter at all, let's just have everybody be just like fun coach, whatever. And then just, you know, he called some plays, you called some plays. Let's all just, you know, let's have some, you know, a mysterious staff with no titles. I mean, why have titles then? You know, I mean, all these people who are trying to be interviewed for head coaching jobs, not all of them, most of them are coordinators. Because that's just how it goes. Most teams have a defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator, but apparently it's just irrelevant. It's just a media thing that we're making up. I mean, I don't know. That's what I wish I would have said. I mean, but of course I didn't. But it's just, I don't know how you can sit there if you're Mike Vrabel and not understand from the start that if you do this, people are going to wonder about it. And I've been saying all year, the bigger issue with this defense is the personnel. It's the lack of personnel. The bad choices on the outside, we've gone through it all. They didn't have anyone to rush the passer. They weren't good enough up front, and they weren't good enough in the back end. I mean, the players didn't play well enough. But some of those players regressed, and I think there's where you look at coaching. And we know what a big difference it made. I mean, he went out and – got Dean Pease out of retirement to be his defensive coordinator, not to come in and say, hey, just come be some kind of a coach and I'll let you call some defensive plays and run the meetings, to be the defensive coordinator. It's an important job. So the fact that he's now making it sound like, oh, I guess I apologize because you guys make a big deal out of nothing. I mean, that's just very disingenuous.
I guess it's important.
Yeah, I would say so. That stood out to me this
total
year.
Total eye roll response from him.
Well, and I'll tell you this. Look, it's not like we didn't know this, I think, heading into it. And we didn't know maybe exactly how involved Shane Bowen was, but we knew he had a pretty heavy hand on this defense, and he was making a lot of the decisions and making a lot of the calls. If the Titans get through this offseason and they name Shane Bowen officially as the defensive coordinator heading into next year, Titans fans are going to riot. I mean, they're not going to like that whatsoever. And I don't know if that's fair or not to Shane Bowen. Again, I don't know why, if that was going to be the case and he's in there anyway calling the plays and he's the one running the meetings, why you don't just name him the defensive coordinator to start with. But based on how bad it was this year, if that's the route the Titans go this offseason, Titans fans are going to be furious.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine they would. Now, of course, when those comments came out yesterday from Vrabel, there was a lot of, okay, then just fire Shane Bowen. And I don't think that'll happen either. I think Shane Bowen will be the outside linebackers coach. I think that you can – I mean, look, you look at this defense, and we're going to focus on Pease leaving and no DC, but also – and I know he didn't have a good night last night, but they miss Kerry Combs as the defensive backs coach. I also think, I mean, look, they lost Tyrone McKenzie, who I thought was a good inside linebackers coach. You know, he kind of left last year, kind of an interesting situation, goes to the Lions. They replaced him with Jim Haslett. I mean, I think that overall the defensive staff suffered this year. But I don't think he will do that. I think he's got to go get someone and hire someone, but that'll be interesting because Vrabel has not, I mean, he really hasn't gone outside much at all, right? If you look at all his hires, it's been, you know, people that he has worked with. And there's other people who could be candidates for that. But to me, at some point, you have to expand it and say, okay, who's out there who's good? I know that Matt LaFleur came in as the OC, but that was almost like, well, you didn't get the head coaching job, so why don't you come be Vrabel's OC?
Right.
But as you go on and on, you have to – I think expand. It's hard to keep it within your circle, which Vrabel has been able to do for the most part so far.
Well, the natural jump that a lot of Titans fans are going to go to this offseason is, all right, Dean Pease, he's been retired for a year. Why not just call him back up and see if he's interested in coming back in and running this defense? And, you know, he talked to the Tennessean earlier this year and made comments about how he misses the game. And obviously with COVID, retirement's not going the way that he thought it would. So I don't know what his interest level would be, but if you're the Titans, is that the first place you go this offseason when it comes to defensive coordinator and trying to get that spot figured out? Is Dean Pease the first call you make? Is it as simple as that?
Well, I think it's worth a call. I mean, why not? I mean, if he wants to come back and has the energy, you know that he's terrific. So, yeah, I mean, I'd certainly make that call. I still have my doubts that in the end – Dean Pease is going to choose to do that. You know, I think one thing about this year is, you know, when you retire and he has grandkids playing and his son's coaching all this stuff, and then you have COVID, probably makes like your retirement year way less fun, right? You know, so
you're basically just sitting around the couch watching football.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they got him, but sure, yeah, definitely make that call. But you have to do something, and you know, I think that, you know, Jared and Floyd talked about this. I think there's something to the idea that Vrabel didn't necessarily want Shane Bowen to be the lightning rod because that's what he would have been. I mean, this year, if he was the DC, then it would be very simple. Fire him. Get him out of here. Fire him, right? And so it's sort of one of those kind of tryouts. I mean, Belichick has done this stuff. But, you know, nobody else is Belichick. Belichick does stuff that doesn't work for other people in a lot of ways, right? And so I think that probably makes sense. The idea of, okay, let's sort of let Shane do it, but kind of not totally put everything on him. But at this point, I mean, you just have to have a new person in there to me and some new ideas and even be open to, you know, just some real schematic changes possibly. I don't know if Vrabel would be or not because that's his baby. You know, he's a defensive guy, but think you got to be open-minded here if you're him and really want to turn this thing around because it has so many issues.
So now that the season is over, how do you view this Titans team? How will you remember the 2020/2021 Tennessee Titans? Let us know on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.